We call this meeting of the Legacy Funding Division to order for February 15th. Don't have a quorum yet, so we'll approve the minutes later on. Apologize for being a little late today, but on the way, just as I was leaving, I ran into my former 7th grade history teacher and football coach, and I had to talk to him for a while because he was spreading some stories about me that were not true that needed to be corrected. So, with that said, we will proceed today with where we left off yesterday. I think, though, today, just to make sure that we actually do get through the discussion of the bill today, we will take questions at the end after Mr. Becker has made his presentation. So if you've got a burning question about a particular thing, you know, write it down or whatever so you don't forget it. But I do want to make sure that we get through the discussion of the bill. And so with that, Representative McNamara and Mr. Becker.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would like to let members know that I'd like to move House File 2086 to be passed and moved on to the House Environment Committee. And to get the bill in the shape that you said we don't have a quorum yet.
We don't have a quorum yet.
I'll wait. But if Mr. Becker could walk through the bill, maybe in its entirety, Mr. Chair, rather than section by section, that would allow, I know Commissioner Teedy has come down at my request late yesterday, and he is in the audience today, and he's here to specifically talk about the partnership the county would have in the Mississippi Northwoods project, and I think we'd like to hear from him today. If Mr. Becker could walk through, and then maybe we could revert back to Mississippi Northwoods or see how many questions there are on the rest of the bill, and then see how the discussion goes in regards to Mississippi Northwoods and what we do at the end of the meeting.
Okay, whatever works out for you on presenting your bill. I think we do have a quorum now, so if you would care to...
Mr. Chair, if I could move House File 2086 to be passed and referred back to the full Environment, Energy, and Natural Resources Committee, that would be good. And then I would also like to move the A1 amendment. And Ms. Taylor could explain the A1 amendment. It is not only technical in nature. There is some substance to it. If that would be all right, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative McNamara. Ms. Taylor, would you care to explain the amendment, and then we'll vote on the amendment.
Mr. Chair, members, the A1 amendment, this is the amendment that I went through yesterday and reflects the changes that the council recommended that happened after the bill was initially sent to the legislature for the January 15th deadline. It includes the additional $2.5 million that was added to the AIS appropriation, and I'm just going to go through it a little bit more quickly this time, and include some clarification regarding how land should be treated when open for hunting and fishing, depending on whether they're owned by the state, the feds, or another entity.
Okay, any questions on that? Otherwise, you have moved the A1 amendment. Representative McNamara has. Could we then? We'll
That's what I'm going to do.
I'm getting advice on what I'm already doing. We will proceed to a vote to get the bill in the order that the author wants. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carries. Proceed, Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I would defer to Mr. Becker to walk through, and he just reminded me that we also have Nature Conservancy in the office today to address Representative Wagenius's question and at my suggestion that they come down about explaining their issues. So he's going to walk through in a fairly expeditious manner so that we try and allow enough time. And then if there's more questions about this, Mr. Chair, it's my thoughts that we probably won't get to a point by the end of the meeting for a vote. There may be more questions yet to be, and I have conferred with you that potentially we may have to hold on to the bill here in this committee for further discussion. So it'd be premature at this time, but by the end of committee, we may know more where we're at there.
All right, Representative Beckmer, we will proceed along those lines. We will have the discussion, take the questions today, and if we haven't reached what we think is the conclusion that we need, we'll lay it over.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm going to start on page 7, line 10, with the Northeastern Minnesota Sharptail Grouse Habitat Partnership Phase 3. It's $1.34 million. For an agreement with Pheasants Forever in cooperation with the Minnesota Sharptail Grouse Society to acquire and enhance lands for management area purposes. Sharptail grouse in Minnesota are suffering a population decline. They need large blocks of habitat approaching 10,000 acres. This project is directed toward that sort of habitat in the east central region, Aiken, Pine, Carlton, and Kanabic counties. On line 7.22, Item D, Protect Key Forest Habitat Lands in Cass County Phase 3, is $480,000 for an agreement with Cass County to acquire land and fee in Cass County for forest wildlife habitat. This also addresses forest fragmentation and has the side benefit of keeping down the cost of county government by controlling where growth takes place. 7.31, the Minnesota Moose Habitat Collaborative is $960,000 for an agreement with the Deer Hunters Association to restore and enhance public forest lands in northeastern Minnesota for moose habitat purposes. It's targeting over 3,500 acres of moose habitat in northeast Minnesota and is being done by a collaborative of the Nature Conservancy, Cook Lake, and St. Louis counties, the 1854 Treaty Authority, Fond du Lac and Grand Portage tribes in the Superior National Forest, and the University of Minnesota. On line 8.6, we begin the next subdivision, wetlands. We're recommending an appropriation of $31,140,000 to the wetlands area in Minnesota in this bill. On line 8.7 is the reinvested Minnesota Wetlands Reserve Partnership Phase 4. This is $13,810,000 to the Board of Water and Soil Resources to acquire permanent conservation easements and restore wetlands and associated upland habitat in cooperation with the United States Department of Agriculture Wetlands Reserve Program. That cooperation brings a 1.4 to 1 federal match to the project. On line 8.28 is item B, accelerating the waterfowl production area program phase 4. This is $5.4 million for an agreement with Pheasants Forever to acquire land and fee to be managed and designated as waterfowl production areas in Minnesota in cooperation with the United States Fish and Wildlife Service. On page 9, line 3, C, Columbus Lake Conservation Area, this is $940,000 for an agreement with Anoka County to acquire land and fee for conservation purposes that connect wetlands and shallow lakes to the Lamprey Pass Wildlife Management Area. This is an example of where the Outdoor Heritage Fund has spawned a county conservation area program expressly to participate in the Outdoor Heritage Fund habitat effort. It's a new program to Anoka County. Line 9.13, Living Shallow Lakes and Wetland Initiative Phase 2, is $4,490,000 for an agreement with Ducks Unlimited for a program to assess, restore, and enhance shallow lakes and wetlands, including technical assistance, survey design, and engineering, to develop new enhancement and restoration projects for future implementation. This takes advantage of Ducks Unlimited's deep shallow lake management expertise and developed through their activities in the United States and Canada. Page 9, line 26, accelerated shallow lakes and wetland enhancement phase 4 is $3,870,000 to the Commissioner of Natural Resources to develop engineering designs and complete construction to enhance shallow lakes and wetlands. This is the companion to the DU program above. On page 10, line 3 is the Marsh Lake Enhancement. It's $2,630,000. The Commissioner of Natural Resources to complete the design and construction to modify the dam at Marsh Lake and return the historic outlet of the Pomme de Terre River to Lockheed Park. This has $6 million in federal match and will redevelop an important migratory stopover historically in the state of Minnesota. On line 1010, we begin the final subdivision of appropriation recommendations for habitats. This is a on line 1011 is the DNR Aquatic Habitat Phase 4. It's $3,480,000 to the Commissioner of Natural Resources to acquire interest in lands in fee or permanent conservation easement for aquatic management areas and to restore and enhance aquatic habitat. At the bottom of the page, line 10.33 is Metro Big Rivers Habitat Phase 3, which is $3,680,000 for agreements to acquire interest in land or, in fee or permanent conservation easements and to restore and enhance natural systems associated with the Mississippi, Minnesota, St. Croix Rivers. This is a collaborative consisting of the Minnesota Valley National Wildlife Refuge Trust, which will receive $1,375,000 to the Friends of the Mississippi River, $375,000 to Great River Greening, $930,000 to the Minnesota Land Trust, and $1 million to the Trust for Public Land. On line 11.28, Dakota County Riparian and Lakeshore Protection and Management Phase 3 is $480,000 for an agreement with Dakota County to acquire permanent conservation easements and restore and enhance habitats along the Mississippi Canyon and Vermilion Rivers. This is a showcase project for the metropolitan area. On page 12, line 14D is Lower St. Louis River Habitat Restoration. It's $3,670,000 to the Commissioner of Natural Resources to restore habitat in the Lower St. Louis River estuary. The types of projects that are going to be done are fish passages, stream channel restoration, floodplain restoration, submerged vegetation restoration. It will all be done in cooperation with the Clean Water Fund, NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, the UN, and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, who have all funded projects to go along with this. On line 1220 is Cold Water Fish Habitat Enhancement Phase 4. $2,120,000 for an agreement with Minnesota Trout Unlimited to restore and enhance cold water fish, river, and stream habitats in Minnesota. On line 12.30F, Grand Marais Creek Outlet Restoration. This is $2,320,000 for an agreement with the Red Lake Watershed District to restore and enhance stream and related habitat in the Grand Marais Creek in the Red River Valley. On page 13, line 4 is Knife River Habitat Restoration. It's $380,000 to the Lake Superior Steelhead Association to restore trout habitat in the Upper Knife River watershed. This is a restoration of beaver damage occurring over the years. It consists of bank stabilization and plantings primarily. On page 13, line 12, protect aquatic habitat from Asian carp. With the A1 amendment, this now reached $5,500,000 in the second year to the Commissioner of Natural Resources to control invasive carp using structural deterrence to protect Minnesota's aquatic habitat. On line 13.19 is the appropriation to the Outdoor Heritage Conservation Partners Grants Program Phase 4, which is $4,990,000 to the Commissioner of Natural Resources for a program to provide competitive matching grant grants of up to $400,000. I want to point out that this is revised language from what you've seen earlier. It's simplified, taking out some specific criteria to make the applications easier. The DNR Commissioner has pledged in a letter to continue to use our prior detailed criteria and existing plans as a basis for evaluation. I also want to point out that there's new language that occurs on line 13.31. Grants shall not be made from appropriations in this paragraph for projects that have a total project cost exceeding $575,000, $366,000 of this appropriation may be spent for personnel. On page 14, the match language occurs on line 7. The program shall require a match of at least 10% from non-state sources for all grants. And I want to point out on line 10, page 14, for grant applications of $25,000 or less, the commissioner shall provide a separate simplified application process. That's the end of the bricks and mortar in the bill. I'd like to go to page 15 now and run quickly through administration. There's $220,000 in administration. on line 15.15 is contract management, which is $175,000 to the Commissioner of Natural Resources for contract management duties. This is to defray the cost of preparing and managing contracts with non-governmental organizations and non-state governments. On page 15, line 26, is funding for the technical evaluation panel. $45,000 is to the Commissioner of Natural Resources for up to do 10 restoration evaluations. Subdivision 7, beginning on line page 15, line 32, defines the availability of the appropriation. Very quickly, you can find the heart of this in page 16, line 9. Unless otherwise provided, the amounts in this section are available until June 30th, 2015, so that's a three-year availability period. On line 1612, beginning after the period, funds for restoration or enhancement are available until June 30th, 2017, 5 years longer or longer. And on hit line 17, if a project receives federal funds, the time period of the appropriation is extended to equal the availability of federal funding. So I want to move now to payment conditions and capital. You've seen, those of you who have gone through this bill before, have seen this particular language. It's begins on line 26, payment conditions and capital equipment expenditures. On line 16.29 points out that these appropriations should be administered on a reimbursement basis for non-state agencies. And they're only for expenditures directly related to each appropriation's purpose. On page 17, line 9, reasonable amounts may be advanced to projects to accommodate cash flow needs. And page 17, line 14, I want to point out that capital equipment expenditures for specific items in excess of $10,000 must be itemized in and approved as part of the accomplishment plan. Beginning on line 18, page 17, is a codification of past session laws, and we're asking the legislature to codify these past session laws to simplify future changes in reference. On line 20 is the codification of the feature of the accomplishment plan feature. I'll direct your attention to page 17, line 25. The accomplishment plan must account for the use of the appropriation and outcomes of the expenditure and measures of wetlands, prairies, forest, fish and game and wildlife habitat, restored, protected, and enhanced. The plan must include an evaluation of results. No money appropriated from the Outdoor Heritage Fund may be expended unless the council has approved the pertinent accomplishment plan. On line 1730 is the next section. The actual codification begins on line 32. Subdivision 13, project requirements. As a condition of accepting money, this is the recipient agrees to a series of requirements protecting the public interest. Those requirements begin on page 18, line 3, with a terms of delineation for all conservation easements, must be permanent, specify the parties, etc. The next item is line 18. For all restorations, this recipient must prepare and retain an ecological restoration plan, restoration and management plan, and those have to be consistent with current conservation science and ecological goals for the restoration site. The next item is on line 28. For new lands acquired, a recipient must prepare a restoration and management plan in compliance with paragraph C, including the identification of sufficient funding for implementation. On line 31, page 18, the next item, to ensure public accountability of the use of funds, a recipient must provide to the Lasard Sands Outdoor Heritage Council documentation of the process used to select parcels acquired in fee or as a permanent conservation easement, and must provide the council with documentation of all related transaction costs, including but not limited to appraisals, legal fees, recording fees, commissions, other similar costs and donations. This information must be provided for all parties involved in the transaction. The next item that the recipients agree to is on page 19, line 6, item F, except as otherwise provided this appropriation, all restoration and enhancement projects must be on land permanently protected by a conservation easement or public ownership or in public waters. On line 10, page 19, is item G. To the extent an appropriation is used to acquire interests in real property, a recipient must provide the council and the commissioner of management and budget an analysis of increased operation and maintenance costs likely to be incurred. The next item is on page 19, line 15. A recipient must give consideration to and make timely written contact with the Minnesota Conservation Corps for possible use of the Corps' services. Page 19, line 20, a recipient must erect signage. The next section being codified is found on line 24, page 19. It's a standard item, purchase of recycled and recyclable material. On line 31 of page 19 is the beginning of the codification of the land acquisition restrictions. Very briefly, an interest in real property must be used in perpetuity of the specific term of an easement, interest for the purpose for which the appropriation was made. This is intended to prevent conversion of acquired lands to other uses than the appropriation intended them to be used for. Further features allow the state to reclaim the land or have it replaced. I'm going to skip now to page 21, section 7, subdivision 16. This is a real property interest report, and a recipient of the Outdoor Heritage Fund that is used for acquisition must submit annual reports on the status of the real property. This is a check on conversion and works hand in hand with the prior section. Line 21, page 21. Easement monitoring and enforcement requirements. This governs setting up, using, and reporting on accounts intended to support easement stewardship in perpetuity. The next item I'd like to point your attention to is on page 22, line 8, successor organizations. This particular statute governs in the event of an organization's dissolution. Provides for legislative approval of the replacement organization. And that, very briefly, is the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Becker. Any comments, Mr. McNamara first, or should we go to questions? Representative Guinness.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative McNamara, I'm pleased to see the amount of money that's going to wetlands. Just in general, but I have a question about the not the wetland reserve, but the accelerating waterfowl production and shallow lakes and all of these shallow lakes restorations. How are folks in the that are dealing with these restorations dealing with common carp?
Representative McNamara.
Representative Guinness, I'm trying to think in this the one of the Marsh Lake project, the restoration, back to restore it to the original riverbed, if I'm not mistaken, is an effort to separate the lake from the potential of common carp. I'm not sure if maybe Mr. Becker can elaborate if there's any specific barriers and such on any of this work, and if they are, where they are.
Mr. Becker.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Representative Bogenius. The primary tool used in both the DU and the DNR shallow lake wetlands management programs is seasonal drawdown to basically deprive the carp of habitat long enough for them to die. This is done through water control structures built at the egress of the wetland. However, this particular appropriation also has some capital equipment in it that's to substitute for water control structures in the form of two high-capacity pumps, portable pumps that can be moved from place to place to place to do the drawdowns to enhance the winter kill of the carp.
Representative Guinness?
I have some... a couple questions of follow-up. Do you mind?
That's fine.
one of my favorite places to go in the summertime, take the grandchildren going canoeing, is to Lake Christina on, you know, Douglas, between Douglas and Pope County. No, Otter Tail County. And go every year. And we have spent ton of money in that area, that shallow area. And this year, it was pea soup. The water was green. It was drawn down a couple of years ago. It was dark green. But what was really disappointing is there were no nests. We usually kind of paddle through the reeds and check the eggs in the nests, and no nests, no waterfowl, no reeds. So I'm concerned about our protocols for, I'm glad we're working on this, but it's the protocols that we're using that I'm worried about. Because we have a protocol for that area that's not working. And so that's my question.
Mr. Becker.
Representative Mugenius, I'm actually glad you asked about that. This past year, DU with Outdoor Heritage Fund completed the installation of a water control structure on Lake Christina, designed to draw it down. The implementation protocol requires there to be a certain capacity downstream for them to operate the pump. They had intended to operate it. They never got within the proper protocol for downstream water levels to operate the pump. Therefore, the pea soup that you saw today. Hopefully, the weather will cooperate and we'll be able to draw it down. They'll be able to draw it down this coming year, and we'll see the results. This is in lieu of million-dollar rotenoning projects, which I think we all want to avoid as much as possible.
Representative Wiginius.
Well, this will not be the first drawdown, though, of this area. It was drawn down before, not too many years ago. And so that's my concern. I mean, we draw it down and hopefully we avoid the chemicals. So one of the things that perhaps we should talk about is, obviously we've got carp in the lake. I mean, maybe it's not so obvious, but it just seems to me that that's obviously one of the problems. Are we doing anything there and in these other places to manage the carp? This is the common carp.
Mr. Becker?
Mr. Chair, Representative Wiginius, in this particular bill, they're the barriers, of course. In past bills, we have installed common carp barriers. I don't know of any in this particular situation. They are pretty effective on small scale. For sure. And I think that there's more of that can be done and other things.
Representative Wiginius.
Can you help us with the other things? What else can be done here?
Mr. Becker.
Well, I think that as a state we need to understand our enemy.
Well, I would agree with that.
One
of the things I've been thinking about is, I don't know whether one of the protocols is for them to, I don't know that you could use this money, but one of the protocols would be to put back some of our small fish. We heard Dr. Sorensen talk about bluegills and sunnies and crappies and how they eat carp eggs. Are we looking at any of that kind of thing? Are folks looking at any of that kind of thing as they are drawing down these lakes?
Representative McNamara.
Mr. Chair, if I could say, Representative Wiginius, it's my hope, and I think probably your hope, that in the future we may have proposers come forward to LCCMR or to LSR and SAMS for some innovative ideas that can serve dual purpose. One, the potential to catch sunnies in a lake and get rid of carp. We have other ones where you have the potential to catch walleyes and get rid of fathead minnows. Kind of serve dual purpose. They clean the water up and create actually a game fish potential, oftentimes short term because the ponds can freeze out because they're shallow in nature. But if the game fish survive for a few years, they, in the case of the bluegills, they eat the eggs of the carp. In the case of walleyes, the walleyes eat the fathead minnows, which then help turn the lake out of its turbid state. So those are the ones, along with the barriers and the pumps to draw down, are all things that I think many of us are hopeful of seeing projects come forward that we could utilize to help our lakes.
Representative Wagenius.
This is a lot of money, and I'm not regretting a dime of it, but it does seem to me that if we do these, that we have to have a way of evaluating the success of these particular, I mean, let's have a dual purpose here. We're spending the money to do it. Is there a way to also look at these projects, compare the techniques that are used, and do it in a formal way that is useful for projects down the line?
Mr. Becker.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wagenius, we do ask that there be evaluation in addition to the restoration evaluations required in statute within the programs. That's required by the statute that I just read to you, and that applies to all of these. I also wanted to say that as far as aquatic invasives are concerned, the council recently amended their call to look for long-term aquatic invasive solutions. And I want to say to the people in this room that we're hungry for those kinds of programs to be proposed. We'd like some good competition, but it's an important thing to do.
Representative Wagenius.
Well, we're going to do evaluations, and that's good, but I'm just trying to think, is there a way we could set up a protocol that for each of the evaluations we learn certain things where we can compare these, or somebody who's good at analysis can say, these three things really worked well and these three things didn't work well? Because if we have the data, and the data's in the same, roughly the same set, it's useful. If people have their own way of evaluating and they don't do it the same, I'm not sure that the evaluations will help the next generation as much as they would without doing something comparable. Am I making myself clear at all?
Representative McNamara?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and maybe this will help a little bit, and this discussion may need to continue, but at some point I would like to bring especially Crow Wing County down if we could. But Representative Wagenius, if you remember, there are the restoration audits required on these projects, which will be this Lessard Sam's Outdoor Heritage money, the clean water, are really a phenomenal opportunity for our state, and the money available is terrific. I mean, $100 million a year for the different thirds, for instance, in this case, $97 million, and the thoughts are it would continue to grow. But we have to really be smart in how we spend the money, because folks are going to ask the question, is it worth it? And we want to be able to say, yeah, look at what we've done. And truthfully, so far, we've done it for 3 years. You look back at what we funded, it's phenomenal. Should we be looking and seeing, well, did it really work? It sounds phenomenal, but what were the results? What were the outcomes? What happened because of it? Those are really good questions that we want to be able to say, you know what? We thought all 10 of them were good, but actually 8 of them were really good, and 2 would have been better spent on somewhere else. Well, we got 22 years to redirect that money. Let's redirect it then and do that. So I think your point, Representative Wagini, is to ask over and over, what actually are we getting for what we're paying? We can't ask that enough, because that is going to help us going forward. And we've got some tools here, but we're open to additional ideas and tools and using science and experience to move forward wisely.
Representative Wagenius.
Well, thank you. I wasn't really thinking of the audits in this case, because there are only 10 of them, and we've got that many projects here. I was really thinking more of asking people, when they report their evaluations, to do it on a similar form. I mean, certainly that's what staff could do, is design something that where we get similar information from each one of these things, so that we can use that not for these projects, but for the next level of projects.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Becker.
Representative Wagenius, we'll take your request under advisement. We're redeveloping the application process and the management process, and we'll pay special attention to common evaluations in the accomplishment plans, as well as laying out in the request plans for evaluation.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, if it's okay, at this time we had a number of questions in regards to the Mississippi Northwoods project. I know there was also questions about the Nature Conservancy, and I don't know, Mr. Chair, if you wanted to spend 5 minutes with the Nature Conservancy to understand. It sounds like that might make sense to understand their proposal, which is kind of unique and innovative. Maybe we could hear quickly from that and then move into the Mississippi Northwoods. And looking at the time, I'm hopeful that we can at least get through Commissioner Tiede's availability before the committee, but I believe we may not finish with the bill today. But if you would want to call the Nature Conservancy, Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative McNamara, I think that's a good suggestion. Mr. Neil Pekin of the Nature Conservancy, would you come down, please? And also, we will try to make sure that we get to the commissioner today, too. Before we start, we can move the minutes of our last meeting, yesterday's meeting. Would someone move the minutes, please? Representative Torkelson?
Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to move the minutes of the last meeting.
Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The minutes are approved. Welcome, Mr. Feek.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I appreciate the opportunity to come here and answer any questions that may have arisen from our project. I guess I'll start, if I may. Oh, yeah, thank you. Sorry. My name is Neil Feakin. I'm the project manager for the Prairie Recovery Project for the Nature Conservancy. If I may, I'll just talk for just a couple seconds about the multiple benefits of our project, because it's been part of the conversation here recently. One of the goals of this Prairie Recovery Project is to not only enact good quality conservation on the land, but to do so in a way that also benefits local communities. And one of the ways we're trying to do that is through generating revenues from these grasslands and prairies that we're working to protect and enhance. We're looking at using tools like using cattle for grazing, hay production, native seed production, potential biofuel production down the road, in ways that are consistent with our conservation management goals, but also maintain some economic utility for the local community. And that would allow us to continue to pay property taxes and offset some of the long-term costs of the project. So with that said, if that's enough of a quick summary, I'd be open to entertaining questions.
Well, thank you, Mr. Pekin. Questions? Representative Wagenius.
Well, I'm with apologies to Representative Torkelson. I think I'm going to ask the question that I've heard you ask before.
I've heard that you two think a lot alike, so... Continue, please.
Your project involves a huge amount of public money, $4 million, yet it seems to me that you are competing with local businesses. Is that Is that true?
Mr. Beacon?
Mr. Chair and Representative Wagenius, we don't believe that we are competing with local businesses. We believe that we're working in partnership to help enhance business opportunities in the rural communities. One example I'll give is we're working closely with the Minnesota State Cattlemen's Association to try and figure out ways to give additional access to Nature Conservancy property, DNR-owned properties, and U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service properties, again, in a way that helps meet our management objectives, but also in a way that helps them meet some of their needs as far as access to livestock grazing opportunities. So we really work hard not to compete with local businesses, but we've got a history and a track record working with business to try and create these multiple benefits in a win-win situation.
Representative Wagenius.
Well, if you are offering a cattleman to come onto your property to graze cattle, and the guy next door has to have his own property, it does seem that one person is getting a super advantage because of public money. Am I missing something here?
Mr. Feakin.
Mr. Chair and Representative Wagenius, we're not offering Nature Conservancy land up at no cost to a landowner. We are working towards achieving a market rate when we lease our property out. So we're not just looking to let these people on for nothing. I mean, we're trying to generate revenues from this sufficient to pay property taxes. We're going to have the same long-term needs for management and property tax burdens that the neighboring landowner has. So we're working towards trying to keep those on the property tax rolls.
Representative Wagenius.
So is part of this agreement a written contract to pay property taxes?
Mr. Feakin.
Mr. Chair and Representative Wagenius, if the contract you're referring to is between us and the lessee, the grazer?
No, the county.
We have an agreement with the state through the Lessard, with the Outdoor Heritage Fund money. That's a grant agreement with the state, with the DNR. In that grant agreement, we're bound to paying property taxes on these. So that is an agreement that we're abiding with the state.
Representative Perkelson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple of quick questions. One, you mentioned grazing on these properties. What's the situation with the fencing that allows that grazing?
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As far as the intensity of the grazing programs on these properties, who determines that?
Mr. Feakin.
Mr. Chair and Representative Torkelson, the Nature Conservancy has a history of grazing, so we have knowledgeable land managers that help determine those grazing rates. We work with the Natural Resources Conservation Service to develop grazing plans, and we also work with the Minnesota DNR area wildlife managers when we're working on lands that are either adjacent to or owned by the DNR.
Representative Parkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one more question on a different topic. Do you ever consider bee habitat for honeybees as you maintain these lands?
Mr. Beacon.
Mr. Chair and Representative Torkelson, the diversity of species out there is of foremost concern to the Nature Conservancy. So we're not just about grass production for livestock. We're about the full complement of prairie species, which includes the forbs that bees are dependent on. So by default, because of the way we're managing these properties, honeybees would definitely benefit from our properties.
Representative Torkelson.
Just to follow up, Mr. Chair, so do you actually consult with the beekeeping industry as you move forward with these maintenance programs?
Mr. Pickett.
Mr. Chair, Representative Torkelson, we have not consulted directly with the honeybee industry on these.
Thank you.
I do. I'm sitting here. This is a new way of spending public money, so I'm thinking about it. If you earn money over and above the cost of property taxes, what happens to that money?
Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Chair and Representative Wagenius, the money that we earn from these properties is placed in a segregated reserve account within the Conservancy, and they are dedicated towards all of the properties that we purchase with Outdoor Heritage Fund dollars. They're not going to be tracked property by property, so if one property makes a profit, we can use that money to help offset another property that maybe has not made a profit, that we're resting or we're not grazing for a period of time for a prairie restoration, for example. Those are properties that aren't going to generate revenues for a while. So we can use these other, we can aggregate the proceeds to, in order to pay for our entire, for the collective project.
Mr. Chair, if I could elaborate. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Wagenius. The Nature Conservancy would not, under the agreement with Lessard Sam's Council, be able to take profits away from this operation. They either have to roll the money back into the Lessard Sam's projects or give the money back to Lessard if they made so much money off of it that they couldn't invest it all back in the projects. It has to go back to Lessard Sam's. They can't buy the land or can't have bought the land with public money and then make a profit off of it.
Representative Wagenius.
Thank you. Thank you for that information. I'm now looking at the language that of the allocation, and it's odd to me because it says that you're given money to acquire native prairie and savanna, but what you're going to be restoring is grasslands and savanna. How careful are you that these grasslands that you're putting in aren't going to crowd out and take over your prairie?
I'm trying to think if the grassland then could be charged with supplanting or supplementing.
Supplanting, I think, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Pekin.
Mr. Chair and Representative Wagenius. When we do restorations, we're very careful about using local ecotype seed. In many cases, we're able to use seed that comes from properties that are adjacent to the properties that we're looking at. In many cases, the restorations and enhancements that we're doing, when we do an acquisition, rarely can we do an acquisition that consists of entirely native prairie. Oftentimes, it'll be a piece of native prairie adjacent to a piece of introduced pasture with maybe a little bit of agricultural land with it. And that's just kind of the nature of the acquisition business. Rarely can you just find a piece of prairie. So when we restore those adjacent pasture lands, agricultural lands, most of the time we can use the seed source of that native prairie that's adjacent. So the Conservancy's got a long track record and I think a good history of doing conscientious restorations that favor biodiversity and local ecotype plant species.
Representative Wagenius?
Then it seems to me maybe the appropriation is not written correctly. So, something to think about.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Pickham, do you know how this portion of the bill got named?
Representative Murphy, you use your microphone,
oh,
please.
I'm sorry.
Do you know how the name, how you've arrived at the name? The Mississippi Northwood Habitat Complex Protection.
Mr. Pekin.
Mr. Chair and Representative Murphy, I'm talking about the Prairie Recovery Project, not the Mississippi, the Upper Mississippi Project is the Trust for Public Lands. So I can't speak to how that particular project was named.
I'm sorry. I must have gotten mixed up. But they can be warned.
Okay. Be warned, there's another question coming. Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is, and this is probably legacy funding 101, but when a nonprofit takes title to the property through use of public dollars, nonprofits don't live forever. And in fact, in recent years, there have been major problems with nonprofits. What happens if you cease to exist?
Ms. Becker.
Mr. Chair, Representative Winkler, that's addressed partially in the successor organization statute that is on page 22. There's also a nuanced part of your question in what happens if the successor organization attempts to do something else with the property and it reverts to the state. According to Section 6, which is a codification of the land acquisition restrictions, paired with Section 7, Subdivision 16, which is the real property interest report, which sets up a system of annually vouching that the property that you've acquired is still being used as intended. And if we find that that's not the case, there's a remedy of either return or replacement.
And Mr. Chair, Representative Becker, I guess the question I have, and maybe this is implicit in your answer, but it wasn't clear to me. If the Nature Conservancy or any other nonprofit corporation goes into receivership, because, you know, I'm just thinking, for example, in the situation with the Petters companies and Tom Petters, where there was substantial investment, which of course they would never do, but as a general matter, there was substantial investment in companies that basically the money was gone and the nonprofit organization was essentially bankrupt and goes into receivership and its assets would go into a receivership. Is there a provision for the land to automatically revert to the state in a situation like that, or is that kind of a bridge we haven't crossed yet?
I believe the provision is there for
it.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, Representative Winkler. I believe that the provisions that we have proposed in statute address that. If not, Subdivision 18 clearly states that we have to notify the legislature and propose legislation to address the issue of the successor organization. But Representative Winkler, I've been involved in writing all these statutes over the years, and at least in the meetings that I was in with staff, the question you posed never was expressly addressed. It was all in the context of conversion to a different use and not bankruptcy, I think, is what you're referring to. So I'd like some time to cogitate on it with staff.
Mr. Chair, Mr.
Winkler?
I think that would be a good idea. These stories keep popping up, so I'd be curious to hear what you come up with on that.
Mr. Chair and Representative Winkler, can I just add one thought to that? As a course of doing business, before we acquire a property, we consult with the Department of Natural Resources to ensure that in the unlikely event that we would end up defaulting on this property, the property that we're acquiring actually makes sense and fits in with the department's long-term goals for property management.
Representative Woodclair?
Mr. Chair, I think that's a good consultation to have, but the question is whether it's possible or whether we should have a provision in law that says that the land automatically reverts to the state and no other claimant against the property of the nonprofit in insolvency has any claim on that particular piece of land that's been purchased with public dollars. Anyway, that may run afoul of federal bankruptcy laws. I don't know, but It seems to me it's a question worth pursuing.
At this point, if no one has any other questions for Mr. Deacon, we'll excuse him. And would you like to bring a commissioner up, Representative McNamara?
Thank you, or Mr. Chair. If I could ask Commissioner Teedy to come down, and we were having a discussion in regards, and Ms. Nash looks like from Trust for Public Land is also coming, and we could continue on with the discussion that we were having yesterday in regards to Mississippi Northwoods. And if I could ask the commissioner to introduce himself and maybe some opening remarks, that would be good. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative McNamara. Commissioner, would you introduce yourself to the tape, please?
Mr. Chairman, Paul Teedy, the last time I was here, I could say proudly I was chairman of the Crowley County Board. However, we rotate our chairmanship, so while I have been deposed, it's in the normal course of events. I also want to say that I want to nod to the longevity of Representatives Murphy and Moginius, who I had the privilege of serving with. Their longevity far out seeds mine, and I want to give a nod of approval for that capability. And then in that context, serving as a member of your august body, the effectiveness of being 1 in 201 versus the effectiveness of being 1 in 5 is a much better ratio on the county level. So, but I do that because we're coming here with, I think, a rather unique partnership that we and Crow Wing County have been willing to engage.
Plus, by the hour, you get paid better.
Thank you. I'll try and remember that, Mr. Chairman. But again, I speak now less than 24 hours since the invitation was extended to me to appear before you, so I cannot give you the standing of the Crow Wing County Board and its five members. I can simply try and give you my personal reflection on that. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I didn't come prepared to necessarily, I came more prepared and willing to try and answer your questions of me. I do believe this is a potential partnership that it was only with the encouragement of the Commissioner of the DNR that we even entertained the possibility. I didn't know that it was possible, and so we've, since that time when Commissioner Landwehr has suggested the county might be the eventual owner of this, that's when we engaged in this conversation.
Thank you. Perhaps, Ms. Nash, if you would introduce yourself as well, and then we'll take questions of both of you. Welcome back again.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, committee members. Again, Becca Nash, Project Manager at the Trust for Public Land. And I just wanted to give also some brief context as to the county's involvement in this project. And again, as I talked about yesterday, this is a project that goes back at least 10 years in an attempt to be proactive to identify some of Potlatch Corporation's lands that were best suitable for conservation and try to protect those ahead of time because of their natural resources qualities, with the understanding that some of their other lands would be best suitable for other uses. And so again, as I discussed, this was a very high priority working with the county and the different divisions of the Department of Natural Resources. Given its 2.7 miles of frontage on the Mississippi River, the high-quality wetland, aquatic habitat, forest habitat, the lake-like basin that's formed by the Brainerd Dam, creating a wonderful habitat for muskies, and for, it's considered a world-class bass fishery. The wild rice beds in front of the property make this a top 10 wild rice destination in the state, and it is the number one waterfowler destination in the Brainerd Lakes area. So I just don't want to lose context of the project that we're working on and the great conservation that we're trying to accomplish. And going back 10 years, as I said, this was sort of a collaborative effort with the county and the DNR to identify proactively what lands were best suited for conservation. As the project evolved over the last 10 years, it had been envisioned as a DNR acquisition. And in fact, when we submitted a proposal to the Lessard Council early last year, it was envisioned at that time to be a DNR acquisition. We did get feedback about concerns over the pilt liabilities that the project would create. And so in response to Lessard, in response to some legislators, and with the leadership of the Department of Natural Resources, who I really give credit to their willingness to look at and pursue other models of ownership and management in the state. We did go to the county and talk to them about their interest in playing a role, and we were delighted that they recognized what a resource this was and stepped forward and was willing to take over that management responsibility, alleviating those future costs for the DNR and alleviating the payment in lieu of taxes concerns. So I just want to give that context and give a nod to both DNR and the county for their participation in figuring out this once-in-a-lifetime opportunity.
Thank you. Members, questions of Commissioner Keady and Ms. Nash? Representative Dill.
Thank you, and this is addressed to the commissioner. Commissioner, how much general awareness is there in Crow Wing County as to the tax implications of taking this off of a private? I mean, to our bill in general, it seems to me that we're getting more and more creative on how to avoid paying PILT, and that we are finding these subtle ways. Now, the $14 million deal isn't very subtle. It sticks out a lot more than smaller deals. But I'm wondering how, in my little small community, we've got an agency looking at buying a piece of property, and the town is in an uproar because it's taking away property taxes that a normal, regular course of business is doing and paying and has for decades. How generally aware are the people in Crow Wing County of this and the actual ultimate what is going to happen?
Commissioner Keady.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Vidal, as always, when you try to measure public opinion, I'm sure it's varied, and I think the public is aware. I think they're aware, and the issue that you raise is one that the county board has looked at, and we have, Representative McNamara and I have talked about this. There is some frontage on 210 that we think we could do a land exchange with the DNR and could recoup some of that by developing that piece that's not really part of this. We think that's attractive on a number of fronts, not the least of which this property is located between an airport and a landfill. The opportunity for that to be still a nature area is very much a plus to this. I think the general public sees this as the potlatch property has been used by the public for many years already. So I don't think they see that necessarily as an equivalency to some other properties that might be there. They have gotten a tax break because of their tree growth anyway. And so I think this is, again, as Nash says, I think there's a public receptivity to a retention of this as a public use.
Representative Dill?
Well, just more of an editorial comment. Where I live, there's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands of corporate acres of land, and it's been quasi-public for time immemorial. And until Potlatch started selling off the leases and people started coming to City Hall and Orrin pounding on the door and saying, what the H is going on here? I've been hunting with my grandpa and my grandma and my everybody else over there. It didn't really become aware that it wasn't public land at all. And I sense from your comment that a lot of people think the same thing about the Potlatch land as they did up around where all the Sevier National Forest and the Potlatch and the Forest Capitals and the Boise's and those people existed. And I'd be surprised, frankly, if the people, if I walked down the main street of the biggest town in the county, or even if I walked a lap around the terminal in the airport at Crow Wing County, which I'm in a fair amount, that not one person would know that the tax base is going to evaporate because the county gets this land. I just doubt it. That's like I can walk in downtown Duluth and ask people where Voyageurs National Park is, and one in 60 know where it is. And it's in the same county as where they live. So I'm just making a point. And
Commissioner Teedy, any follow-up?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Dill, I think you and I are probably closer philosophically than you might believe on the issue, but I think to the heart of what you're suggesting is I believe the usage of this land, that's one of the reasons why the county is interested in partnering here, that protecting some of that usage that is there. We know full well you have the power, the DNR has more influence than we do here, could probably go out and purchase that anyway. So I think one of our interests in doing this is to hopefully have an influence in preserving the use of that as the county residents, in addition to the greater state, wants to see use.
Thank you. Representative Ferguson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to explore a little bit more in detail the relationship between the county and the Lessard Sams and the TPL as this potential project moves forward. What sort of relationship would continue in the future? If you would just like to kind of give a general description first, and perhaps I'll have some questions.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Madam Chair.
Go ahead.
Representative Ferguson. It's hard for me not to anticipate where you're trying to take me, so could you be more specific about what your question is of me? How do I see this unfolding in the future?
Well, I'll start asking questions. First off, is there income generating potential for this property, and where would that income go?
Mr. Keeney.
Madam Chair, Representative Torkelson, again, I referenced previously what I think is part of the county board's interest in maybe maximizing some revenue in addition to what's here. We think it's essentially a wash for us more than it is a revenue generator for us to manage the property the way it is. We will be giving up built payments as an example to do that. We think with our fine crack staff on our land services department that we will be able to manage it so that we can hopefully keep that as a wash, and again preserve this not necessarily as a moneymaker for the county if that's the intent, but really just to cover our costs in the management of it.
If I could add, Madam Chair, Representative Torkelson, it does have the potential to be a somewhat working forest. Naturally, Potlatch owned it originally as forest, working forest. The land does not add itself to a perfect working forest situation. A lot of rolling land that is less than ideal for forest management, but there are at least a couple hundred acres in pine plantation that are currently managed by Potlatch, and I believe either from the county or from Potlatch in anticipated in the 20-some thousand, say $25,000 range of an annual forest income potential is on the land. I believe that either from county staff or, maybe if the county, that's some of the questions I think Representative Torkelson and Madam Chair. The county does have some staff here that could talk about. And Crowling County, along with Cass County, are known regionally and statewide as doing a very good job of managing forests. So it might be interesting to hear what they have to say about the forest management component, Representative Torkelson.
Is there someone from the
Madam Chair, Kirk Titus is our land services supervisor, and I think he could give the detail to that better than I could.
Welcome, sir, and would you identify yourself for the record?
Good afternoon. My name is Kirk Titus, Land Services Supervisor, Crow Wing County. Madam Chair, Representative Torkelson. Crow Wing County has been managing forest lands for the past 66 years. We currently manage over 103,000 acres of tax-forfeited land. We have four foresters on staff with nearly 60 years of forest management experience. The management of this property would fall under the guise of our forest management plan. We would go ahead and certify these lands to certification standards, the Forest Stewardship Council and the Sustainable Forestry Initiative, which are two of the two world-class forest certification standards. So we have the tools in place to effectively manage this land. And to get to your question, as far as timber revenues, we're looking at costs of management in years 1, 2, 3 in the $40,000 range to get current forest inventory, road management, those types of things. We're also looking at annual ongoing costs of $14,000 and projected timber income annually of about $16,000. That's based on an analysis that I've done based on some inventory numbers that we got from the owner. So that's our best estimate.
Thank you. Did you have a follow-up?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So what happens to this income?
This income will be reinvested back into the property and some of our other forest management properties.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And if there's additional income in the future, are there any restrictions on where that income, how that income is used?
The income goes back into, you know, no restrictions go to pay for staff and equipment and tools to manage the our forest properties.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the relationship between the state and this land is completely severed. Is that what I'm understanding? There's no ongoing relationship between the state and this property.
Commissioner, did you want to answer that?
Madam Chair, Representative Torkelson, again, you just passed your amendments that give some restrictions there. So we would have to continue to abide by all of that, including any coming back if there is a change of what we were doing there. So I think those restrictions all apply. Specifically to the spending of that money, I think Mr. Titus has said it as clearly as we can. It would simply be our intent, and we don't see this as necessarily a huge boon to our land department.
Representative Tarkelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And when you referred to this earlier as a wash, were you referring to the lost property tax income being a wash, or a wash between the income and the expenses of owning the property?
Madam Chair, Representative Tarkelson, I was talking about timber income and timber management expense.
Mm-hmm. But the commissioner referred to it as a wash. I'm sorry, Madam Chair.
Representative Torkelson, do you have something?
I would like the commissioner to answer that question, please.
Commissioner Teedy.
Madam Chair, Representative Torkelson, again, my response to that was, I just lost it. What was your question again?
The wash.
When I referenced that, I was saying if we did nothing and did not get involved in this, Crow Wing County would, under the current PILT system, have some revenue if this went through with the state. We are. That was what I was referring to as the wash. That PILT income would not be there. We think we can handle what that shift would be. That was the wash of it.
Thank you, Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On another topic in relation to this land, I understand there is the potential for a trail to be built on this land. It's been identified as a priority, I believe, for trail construction. Could any one of you describe to me how that process would move forward and what's involved financially?
Go ahead.
Madam Chair, this has for a long time been identified as a high priority corridor for connecting the Cuyuna Lake State Trail down to Paul Bunyan Trail in Brainerd. As of yet, the Lothard Council approved the project with the understanding that it would be, their funding would be going to protect habitat. And so as the project sits, this land is being protected for habitat. If at a future date funding becomes available, we would go back to the Lothard Council and seek their approval to put a trail corridor in the property, through the property. They would have oversight as to where that trail corridor would go. It would also require that non-outdoor heritage funds be used to pay them back for that.
Thank you, Ms. Nash. Commissioner Teedy.
Madam Chair and Representative Parkinson, just yesterday, today is Wednesday, yesterday, the county adopted a comprehensive trail planning proposal. So there is no denying that trails run through this property, have been used. It's part of our efforts in the county to try and define whatever this piece comes to, how does that fit into overall the picture. But I think, again, Ms. Nash has clearly stated what I believe is a concern of some of the people here is it's not our intention to try and go around that. It's to embrace that and say, how can we, again, maximize this use even in that potential within our comprehensive trail planning that's going on and is ongoing in Crow Wing County.
Okay. Representative Torkelson.
Madam Chair, thank you. I'm not sure who this question is to. So the potential for a trail here, what effect would the installation of that trail have on wildlife habitat and hunting opportunities?
Ms. Nash, or?
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Mr. T. Again, I believe it's within the confines of what the Heritage Funds are. You know, we're not looking to try and get around that. Crow Wing County is certainly not. We want to work with whatever, and I believe the design of that would have to come back to the Heritage Council to address that very issue. So I don't see that necessarily as either a plus or a minus for the development of a trail there. I should see it as a concern that we all have to have if one does eventually go in there.
Representative
Madam Chair, thank you. Is it a plus or a minus for the wildlife, I guess would be my question.
Commissioner Teedy.
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Torkelson, beauty's in the eyes of the beholder, and I guess that's part of the design that will be there. If you're a trail advocate, you're going to say we can design it to have no impact. If you're a non-trail advocate, you're going to say no matter what you do, you're going to influence the wildlife. So I guess I don't have a clear, concise answer. What I do have is an interest on the part of the county to be involved in that discussion so that our comprehensive trail plan has a voice at the table.
Representative Torkelson, all done. Representative Wiginius, did you have a question?
I did not.
Okay. Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a few questions. And I actually think I'd like to start with Mr. Becker because it's right on the point that we just talked about. I'm sorry to make you jump around, but... the question I have is the language on line 7.2 through 7.9, which says that a plan, including trail alignment, must be approved by the Outdoor Heritage Council. And typically when the legislature delegates authority to approve something, it's to an agency. And there's this, you know, the whole Administrative Procedures Act, and there's a whole set of laws about how approval decisions are made. And I'm wondering if you've thought about that, or whether we even, if the legislature can delegate that kind of authority to a council.
Mr. Becker.
Madam Chair, Representative Winkler. We've thought about it. And I think that the operative language actually starts on the prior page, 6.33, which is referring to our conversion statute that we're attempting to codify. And that's been in law and statute for the Legislative Citizens Commission on Minnesota Resources for, well, it was written when John Helland and Tom Bodern were the council, so I would say 1966, Bodern being Senate counsel. 96.
He's not that old.
My age is showing. Your specific point about powers is an interesting one, and I think it would have to be litigated to be determined.
Madam Chair, Mr.
Representative
Becker,
Winkler.
Well, you could also just get an opinion, which might give us some good guidance ahead of time. But that is a question I think it would be good for us to get more information about it, whether that comes from House Research or someone else. But it just, there have to be some limits on the approval authority and or if there if it is, then I think it's important to know what process has to be used for making the determination of approval or not, or if there are criteria, et cetera. Because there has to be some structure built around that.
Madam Chair?
Mr. Becker?
Representative Winkler, we can get you the procedures which were adapted from LCCMR on this issue.
I appreciate that. Representative McNamara?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I would just like to wrap this up. I know we want to get going like in the next 5 minutes to get over to the House floor on time for session at 4:30. I would like us to not move on this bill today for a number of reasons, and most of them center around the good questions on this project. I'm just going to sum up some of what I see are issues on this project and hope that we can look at them. There's talk of the proposed land exchange with the DNR along the highway and what potential that allows for. That's different than what Lessard Sams has approved. It would not be consistent to move forward with this when that's ongoing and in the process. Also, it's come to my knowledge, I was not aware of it as a Lessard Sams Outdoor Heritage Council member, that there actually already is a plan proposed Cuyuna Trail through the property and an alignment through the property already out. It's a plan from, I believe, 2004 for a Cuyuna Trail plan. I think it would be appropriate for that to be shown here, not only before this group, but also to Lessard Sams, because evidently someone's already proposed where the plan would go. It's different than some of the members on Lessard Sams had talked about where they would like the trail to go. Again, I think it's good information that's available for us today, and let's be fully aware of that ahead of time. The other thing centers a couple more issues I have. Issue of the appraisal, I think I want to make sure folks know there clearly is a taxed assessed value on lands today, but they oftentimes are not consistent with current value. Today we have in place the requirement that there be two certified appraisals on this property. That's new guidelines, never before used in the state of Minnesota. This property, the language in this bill, does not allow this property to be sold for any more than the appraised value. And actually other purchases within this bill have the opportunity to be bought at 110%. That's our normal state standards, that we can pay up to 110% of appraised value and go ahead. They have a priority list, so you can say, well, we don't want to buy that one. We think they still want too much. We move to the next one on the priority list. Because this is an individual project, it's different than that. But I want to make sure members know that this is really held to a high standard. And Potlatch, my understanding, has reached an agreement that they will sell it for appraised value. Now, there may be, I don't know, I haven't seen the purchase agreement. I haven't seen any appraisal that's in the works. My understanding, we won't see them until they're done. But I believe there's probably some top and bottom parameters and maybe some dates. I believe they have a date farther out this year of when this purchase agreement ends. But I think that, Mr. Chair, we'd be better if we take a step back here, evaluate this, and look at, can we look at a different model? And another one, Representative McFarland and Representative Dill have worked very hard on the issue of school trust land. Potlatch operates a factory in Bemidji that I had the pleasure to tour earlier this summer that's having a hard time getting the necessary bolts to the logs to that factory to keep it running in an efficient manner. And it's a state-of-the-art facility. We have a number of school trust properties close by that factory that I think we should be looking at a creative way. Is there a possibility that maybe Potlatch has an interest in staying in the state of Minnesota, in northern Minnesota, and could we possibly do some way of keeping that land open to the public, but potentially facilitating an exchange? That would be something that probably no way could happen in this current session, and we would run the risk that this project could be jeopardized. Potlatch could go ahead and sell it to a developer and put homes or whatever they would put on the property. Some of our colleagues would think that's a good thing. I think that would be unfortunate. This property is unbelievably really cool property. I'm just not sure if we know yet exactly how this funding package should all come together.
We've already talked about how important it is to spend $97 million of state money in the best way. It would be my hope, Mr. Chair, that we take a deep breath here, look and see, is there a way we can work with the county, Potlatch, Trust for Public Lands, and evaluate the whole thing and maybe come back with a little bit different model potentially. I don't know for sure. Maybe it'll be the exact same package. But I think we'll be more knowledgeable when we come back before your committee. So, Mr. Chair, if that kind of, I don't know if other folks have thoughts on it. There was an A2 amendment. If you want, we can put the A2 amendment on. The bill would be more in the shape I'm amenable to the A2. I'm not sure. It might be Representative Winkler.
Representative Winkler, would you care to move the A2 amendment? Apparently, the chair of the Environment Committee is going to take it.
Mr. Chair, I would like to move the A2 amendment. It essentially says that if we end up paying less for the property to Potlatch,
you're all choked up.
I'm so excited to get an amendment actually adopted in committee, Mr. Chair.
I understand.
that the funds are canceled back. We end up not using the whole appropriation. And I guess I'd just like to point to line 16.20 through 16.23 in the bill, which says that funds appropriated for acquisition of land may be used to restore, enhance, and provide for public use of the land with the appropriation. So I'm afraid that if we don't adopt the A2 and we end up paying less for the land, that the appropriation of $14 million could be used for other things related to this parcel rather than just the acquisition. So that I'd urge approval of the amendment.
Further discussion? Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carries. At this point, I am prepared to lay this bill over for further consideration later. Representative McNamara?
One final comment, Mr. Chair. I believe I don't want to mislead the public. It's not like we're going to be back here next Tuesday moving ahead quickly.
I think
it's going to take a little time, and I ask for the indulgence of the committee as we try and work through some of these issues. This is really an important bill, and a lot of people have put a lot of work into it, and I do not want the committee to redo the Lessard-Sams work here. They've done a lot of really good work, and I would prefer to honor their work and add to it than disrupt it.
Yeah, thank you, Representative McNamara. But because this may take a little time, and I don't want a burning question to be out there hanging for a very long length of time, Representative Murphy did ask earlier how this area got its name, and that we would like to hear that.
Yeah.
Wouldn't we, Representative Murphy?
I'm certainly waiting for the answer.
All right. Commissioner Keady.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Murphy, as the immediate past president of the Mississippi Headwaters Board, the Mississippi, first 400 miles of the Mississippi, is a world-class resource. We use every effort and every opportunity we can to publicize the Mississippi. So it is Mississippi, it's on the Mississippi, and it is Northwoods, which is what we're doing. So I don't know who came up with it. I want to emphasize that the Mississippi, to me, is the biggest part of that. We have a world-class resource that we think this would just be another jewel of the Brainerd area that would be well received.
I'll go on record as saying I think it's a nice name. Anything else?
Mr. Chair, but to Representative Murphy's point, if Representative Fabian was here, he would tell you that this is 3 hours south of Minnesota's Northwoods.
Yes. And
thank you.
And Mr. Chair.
Representative Murphy.
How is this going to be not confused with the other land that we got from Blandon? The upper Mississippi, whatever that was called.
We'll figure it out later.
Mr. Chair, I do have one more question that I don't need an answer to today, but I would like Representative McNamara or Ms. Nash to answer at the next time that we talk about this. Are there any credits for wetlands or carbon that has been given away in this purchase?
You want to take that later, or do you know? Quickly, Ms. Nash, please.
Mr. Chair, to my knowledge, no.
Thank you. The bill is laid over, and Well King, this case closed.